What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we're bringing on Geir Jordet. I know that's not how it's pronounced in Norwegian, but for my sake, everyone knows that I'm pretty terrible at getting names right. But really excited to have you on. Thanks for coming.
Excited to be on, Greg. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Yeah, so if you wouldn't mind just giving us a quick 30-second, real short, just background. Obviously, you've got titles on titles on titles, and you're slowly growing into other ventures, but just give us a quick background.
So I'm currently a professor in psychology at the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences. So I've been doing a lot of research, predominantly on football or soccer and psychology. I've had a few topics that I've taken further than other topics. I've done a whole lot on what we're going to speak about today a little bit, scanning, visual perception, awareness. I've done stuff on performing under extreme pressure. Done a little bit on learning, effective coaching, and so forth. So that's the research bit. And then I'm also a quite active consultant on different topics, predominantly then in the world of soccer. And I've also started a couple of companies that dig into the implications of some of this work.
Yeah, the big one that I obviously came across was scanning. I just think it's a great topic to talk about because I'm from a very small town. I'm like the last rink in the very east part of Cleveland when I grew up, and there wasn't too many hockey minds, but every once in a while we had Nestle that was in our next door town. So there were some NHLers that would come through or stay due to just them being a huge presence up in Canada. So we had some interesting access, and I always noticed that the top of the top, even if they're like not very good at NHL or like very bubble, they always talked about perceiving and looking and having an idea what you're going to do before you get the puck. So it's always been something that's in the back of my mind of like, okay, that's what the best players do. And to be honest, you know, I always said I'm like underskilled, but maybe a little over aware. So I love this topic. So I'm curious how you even got into scanning in the first place. Like for me, I wouldn't have never taken the leap to go do research on this.
No. Well, I was a player myself, a soccer player and a central midfielder. And I mean, as a player, I got this intuitive sense of how important it was, just like you say, to be aware of what to do before you got the ball, before it was too late. So I used to work on myself at scanning. I just somehow understood that that made sense. And then when I started getting into the academic world, I had to write student papers and I had to try to produce something with respect to research. I was so dissatisfied with where the field of sports psychology was with respect to measuring some of these things, because measuring visual perception back then, and now we're back in the 90s, was all about lab studies, like lab measurements with video simulations or questionnaires. And I'm like, you can't measure something that dynamic and complex as visual awareness on the pitch with everything that's happening around you with a questionnaire. It does not make sense. So I needed to find a way. I felt like I needed to find a way to measure this. So I started experimenting with my student buddies who were football players. And I put the video camera on them in games, just focusing on one player throughout the whole game. And I saw that, okay, there's this behavior, we call it orient yourself before you get the ball. And that's actually possible to quantify. You can count it. And when you can count it, you can analyze it and you can try to make sense out of it. So that's where it started. Since then, and probably 50 student projects later and a few publications, this has become something that can be used to make more sense out of something that is very complex. It does not say everything about vision, about awareness, but it gives you one little piece of input that you can quantify and use to give some meaningful information.
That had to be crazy for opponents if they didn't know what was coming, just seeing this big headset on someone back in the 90s and early 2000s. You know, I don't think they had the super small cameras like they do today where you can just like basically with the, I'm thinking F1, like just put it in the helmet and it shows you. How far has that technology come along? So I saw a video you had where it like almost picked up where the eyes were actually perceiving rather than just what the whole vision is from the camera's view, but also seeing the eyeballs of like, what is that player actually looking at?
Yeah. Now, let me specify one thing. So we didn't actually put the cameras on these players. What we did was we filmed the players. So we didn't do that back then. But with that said, there are these eye tracking goggles that we've used quite a bit. Now, these are pretty sophisticated because it's like a pair of glasses, essentially. So they look like a pair of glasses with a little bit of bulky piece in the middle. But those glasses, well, they cost, I think, $20,000-$25,000 each. So it's a pretty pricey piece of equipment. And they have five cameras in them. So there's one camera that points straight ahead to give you kind of like a GoPro field of vision video. And then there are two cameras that point into the eye to register the center of the eye and the movement. And then there's an algorithm that calculates then what's the actual visual fixation point of the player when you see that video with the field of vision. And that's sophisticated, but of course it's still too bulky to be using in an official game capacity. So I'm still longing for the day that I hope is not too far into the future where you have basically contact lenses or something like that that's just super non-invasive, but gives you at least, you know, a little bit more on the player's field of view. And my guess is that we will get there in probably less than a decade.
Oh, that would be really cool. I feel like hockey might be the better sport for the current day, like just with the helmets. Like you've got the inside padding in the helmet. We probably could input something just like an F1 driver does. So maybe hockey would become the field that has all the scanning research. That'd be super exciting. I think hockey is a little more difficult just with the boards. I mean, maybe it's not. I mean, you have much more insight to this and you can help me understand this a little bit better. Just like I know – like Sidney Crosby, for example, I think he's an excellent player that I've watched. Just my family's from Pittsburgh, so I've seen him a ton. Like he will shape the way that he skates. So he opens his body up to more of the ice so he can see more. So it's almost like he's scanning without like actual moving of his head and what hockey people normally call like, you got to check your shoulders. And he like checks. I like calling scanning because I think it's more accurate, but he's like just getting a wider field or how you pivot on the ice to get a wider field. And like you said, orient your body in space. I'm curious from that perspective, like how are you seeing? Because I know you're starting to dabble into hockey a little bit. How do you see like orientation of body scanning? Like what are some of these metrics? Probably the better question is how are you measuring right now? Because I feel like that'll allow us to go down this a little bit deeper now that I'm talking out loud.
Yeah, no, well, first of all, like you say, scanning is just a part of the chain in a way. The next level here is moving your body and orienting your body. So to what, in what direction is the front of your body directed? Because if you always have the front of your body in the direction of the most relevant information at any point in time, then you don't need to scan. If there's no information behind your back, you don't have to turn your head. You can just continue to look forward. And the next level of that again is how you position yourself. If you're positioning yourself so intelligently or cleverly so that you always have the front of your body towards the most important information, again, you don't have to scan. So it's all connected, how you are moving about on the field or on the ice will enable you to pick up information in an effective manner. with respect to hockey, like you said, I've started looking a little bit at hockey. I've been having a lot of conversations with people in hockey the last couple of years, and we're also there now where we want to launch some projects in it. So we're not far away where we'll be trying to basically replicate some of the things that we've done in soccer into hockey. Now, how that will go, you probably are in a better position than me to talk about, because hockey is a sport that I've always liked, and I've seen games. I have friends in hockey and so forth, but I really don't know hockey, unfortunately. So I look forward to learning much more about the sport and about the requirements of scanning and vision and so forth in this sport going forward.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting field to go into, and we can dive into maybe some of the differences between the two later. But I want to kind of go down a rabbit hole and starting high level and then dive our way in. And my first question is there a correlation between times you scan versus player performance? And how does this adjust maybe between positions? Because if you're a central defender, the majority of the play is going to be behind, in front of you. So you're not going to probably have to look behind you as much as a central midfielder would.
Yeah, so that's the big question that I've spent a couple of decades on in soccer, and probably will have to spend a couple of decades more on to be fully sure about my answers. So far, it seems that there is a correlation, and I have to say it like that because this is complex. There's so many factors playing into this. In more or less all the studies we've done, we find correlations. The thing that makes it tricky is that you need to control for the type of situation you're in, the type of position that you say, the degree of pressure from the opponents, and so forth. And when you control for that, then it becomes a little bit more complex. Those times that we have control for that, what we think well, we find that there's a consistent and robust correlation. Meaning that the more you scan, the higher number of scans or the higher frequency you have in your scanning across positions, the more likely you are to complete your passes, which is then our measure for performance. It's not a big difference. It's not a huge difference. It's not like as long as you scan, you're gonna be a completely different player. But at the highest level, which is where we've measured this predominantly. There is a consistent difference in the studies we've done so far. So that's one important piece of evidence, but that does not mean that we will find that with all players in every team, and of course also in different sports, which is why we're doing these studies, because I think there is a difference. I think there's something to it, but we need to know.
Yeah, I feel like the other piece is like, how good are you at storing information in your mind? Because like you may need to scan more if you can't store it in your head. I always think about hockey players where people are like, how did he make that pass? Like he didn't even look. Like there's no way he could have seen that. And it's like he probably saw it 5 seconds ago and just kind of extrapolated out like, what are the most likely situations where a guy's probably going to go, systems for the team as well. But just like, there's that working memory of like, okay, I looked. What am I retaining? What am I pulling away from that scan? How deep and what kind of depth am I gathering of information? Am I looking at this pressure of the defense, or am I looking at the defensive pressure plus my teammates? Or are we going even beyond that, seeing those two? And okay, where's the movement? I had a fascinating conversation with Martin St. Louis, who's a Hall of Fame hockey player, really short, small guy, but he ended up having a Hall of Fame career. And he was talking about like what goes into his mind as he's playing the game. And he's talking about like stick handedness, the time that you are on your shift, right? Like you're going to be more tired and be able to get to spots. Like it was unbelievable, like the depth of information that he was crunching as he was playing at the highest speeds. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean these things go hand in hand. So it's quite easy to scan a lot. That's just go out on the pitch or on the ice and turn your head all the time. Anyone can do that if that's all they focus on. But the big question is, like you say, how much information are you able to retain? To what extent are you able to process and handle this information quickly and actually convert it into meaningful, productive, functional actions. That's the art here. I suspect, for example, but I don't have the data on it, but I suspect that if you go to the highest level and you find some really high frequent scanners or the most frequent scanners, that they're also equipped with the ability to think fast, that they have a very high processing capacity or high executive function ability, to use some of the jargon here. There's some indications in some of the studies that I've seen on this, which would make sense, that players who collect information at a very high rate, new information where they update basically their impression of the surroundings at a very high frequency, that they're also quick thinkers, that they can deal with information fast. That does make sense, but we still don't have the data to fully confirm it.
My best guess is the players that naturally scan more probably value information more. So I don't know. I'm just a hack at this, but if I'm like looking to scout players for future levels, I'm like, you know, having and being able to process information is pretty critical. Like, I'm literally watching for, how do they scan? Do they look around on the ice? Do they value information? So I'd be curious to see how this works within like maybe a scouting department for an NHL team. And that's probably throwing it out there. I know there's some NHL executives that listen in, that they'll probably start thinking about this of like, maybe that's an interesting project for one of our interns. But like, just seeing how players at the junior ranks scan, and how does that project them? And like, do they scan more? Are they considered in their scouting reports like more intelligent or high hockey IQ, whatever it is? I suspect that is, because why would you scan if you don't value information?
Yeah, and I like the way you think about this. Valuing information is a wonderful term, and also those who just spontaneously scan, they haven't been taught it, they haven't been told to scan, but they just feel instinctively that this is the right thing to do, and they start to do it. There's something about that that's very precious, and it's very appealing. And because that does say something about them. It says something about an interest in the game, an interest in their surroundings, an appetite for information. Those players, you know, they're hunting for information. That's why they scan. But with that said, there's also something to be told for learning to scan and starting at an early age to scan. Because what happens then, if you scan, you're essentially taking in more information. And if you do this over a period of many years, then you're also probably naturally becoming better at differentiating that information, at figuring out what is meaningful in that information that I take in. So basically, they, as a result of scanning more, theoretically, they would also become better at handling information over time. So in that sense, one could say that scanning could be a good thing also for those who basically learn it. Now also, with respect to scanning and scouting, and I have conversations with people in soccer about this all the time. I think if I were scouting for new players, I would want to have a metric for scanning on the table. Not because it says everything, and I hope that I've been clear about how this is not the full answer when it comes to these complex processes, but because it says something. And to have one piece of relatively hard quantitative data on something that is related to awareness and decision-making, I would like to have that. I would like to know that. And then we can have discussion on all those other things that this does not say something about. Players will be high scanners and not good decision makers. They'll be high scanners and good decision makers. But just to have that metric will give us a little bit more of a harder in to those discussions. And I think that most scouting departments would benefit from that.
Yes, I tend to agree. And I know, like, I like to talk about knowledge of the game versus knowledge in the game. Like, one requires perception of like the actual game being played. The other one's just seeing it from above. It's kind of like, I kind of call it like the coaches versus players. Like, coaches have great knowledge of the game. They can see it from above. They know different patterns. players have knowledge in the game where they have to see players coming at them, sorting pressure and having this perception. And by scanning, you're able to do that. And I'm feeling that if you're probably getting it young, you'll be able to perceive it better. And I think that comes into training players as well, of being able to perceive the actual cues and the reads. Now, I think that in the past, we've always said, okay, yo, it's all those kids and Canadians out on the pond playing in the winters for, you know, hours on end. And society has become more and more organized. So it's harder and harder to get those spontaneous moments. And there's a lot of practices that you see with coaches running. And it drives me wild when we're, what I call like flow drills or drills that require very little decision-making or very little perception before actually choosing action. So they've got the greatest little, you know, in hockey world, we call the toe drag. You're just pulling it back from the toe of your stick to the heel and trying to dance around a player, deke around a player. It's like, okay, well, it may be great to have that in your toolbox, but they also need to understand, should I be doing this? And when should I be doing this? And having the perception of good selection of movement. And then two, like, when do I actually do it so I don't get my head taken off and it gets around the defender? You know, if you do it too early, problem. Do it too late, problem. You need to do it the right timing. And it's so hard to do that. But if you're starting early, like you, I think you're saying here, it's like you're just building up a repertoire and pattern recognition of when does it work? How can I best deploy this over and over again? And for me, it's about giving the, as a coach, giving the reps and finding activities where players are able to sort through this, have failure, have success, rather than putting a cone on the ice and we're dribbling around a cone. It could be actually having someone there and going towards how do we train. The other cool thing that I think you have is the idea now we can do more knowledge of the game, but actually take it down to knowledge in the game. So we can talk about the subject, use virtual reality if we're not getting ice time because it's expensive and hard to come by, and you can do it at home. And I know you've got a cool solution for that in the soccer world. I'd love to see it jump over to the hockey world in some capacity. So I'll open it up and just have a comment for you to go off of.
Yeah. Well, there's so many things I could talk about with what you say there. First, let me just mirror what you say with the knowledge of the game and in the game. Because yeah, that's it, right? To develop that knowledge in the game, and the scanning bit for that is just a vehicle. Scanning is never a goal in itself. It's a means to an end. It's a means to get more information in, and the benefit, to just say what I just said in different words, of starting that early, is that it gives you more information to work with. It makes sure that you don't go through a ton of games blind, because if you don't pick up information, you're basically not going to learn from the information either. So to open yourself up for information using scanning and positioning and body orientation, it's a good way to expose yourself to more learning basically in the game. And then a big question will of course come up, that if this is such a useful process, if it's such a useful behavior and something we should be doing more of, how can we improve this in the most effective way possible? And in soccer, as I'm sure is the case in hockey, I mean, to have high functional activities that are as similar to the finished product, to the finished game as possible, is where you want to start. You want to have as much high specific activity as you can. Now, there's a limit to that. There's a limit to how much you can do that. I mean, as much as I would want my players to play in my sport 11v11 games, you know, 4 hours a day, they can't do that. It's too big of a load. There's too much going on that it's impossible to do that from a fitness perspective, from an injury prevention perspective. So you have to limit that. And that's where it gets interesting, because then you have to talk about, are there specific drills we can have on the pitch that will kind of condense some of these processes and make us practice those more effective? And are there also things that you can do outside of the pitch? And in soccer, I co-founded a company, Be Your Best, I think now 7 years ago, where that was the whole rationale. We wanted to create a mini version of a soccer game in a virtual reality set, so that you could strap this on for 5 to 10 minutes per day or 10 to 15 minutes every other day, and basically get this condensed, focused training on the what we think are the most intense, meaningful bits of the game when it comes to visual perception, scanning, processing, and decision making. So what that essentially is, it's just it's a tool where you simulate game situations. You're thrown into the game. You're suddenly in the middle of the pitch or in the position that you play, and you know that in 4 to 7, 8 seconds you're going to get the ball, and you better prepare for that because this is at Premier League speed or Champions League speed. It's all replicated from game situations from the highest level in soccer, which means it's going to be fast. And if you haven't prepared, if you haven't scanned, if you're not aware of what's happening around you before you get the ball, you're going to be killed, almost literally speaking. So you better prepare, and then we measure everything. We measure your scanning, we measure how much information you take in, and of course the quality of the decision. And I think that this way of training, although it's never, ever going to take over for on-field training or on-ice training, it's a cool supplement that I think in periods of time, for warm-up, for periods where you're, for different reasons, whether it's load or injury, you can't practice as much as you want to. In those periods, this is a good supplement that could help move the needle in the right direction. So I do believe in that also going forward.
So you talked about going beyond just the scan itself. So when we talk about scanning, you know, the first thing we think of is the frequency of like how often do we scan? I'm curious what kind of measures, and I know you've talked about like when do you scan? Like that's also an important piece of this. So I'd love for you to dive into, okay, we understand we need to scan and scan more frequently. That has a positive correlation to information bringing in and performance. But what are the details that lie underneath us actually doing it more often?
Yeah. I'll take that as an invitation to dig into basically what we call timing of scanning, which I think has a very substantial principle in it. So the story actually of how I kind of discovered this was I was watching one of the top players in soccer live at the stadium. I was watching Cristiano Ronaldo. He played for Real Madrid and he played in a Champions League game against Copenhagen in Copenhagen. In that game, I happened to have a camera pointing at him. So my student was at the game. So he was in one part of the stadium filming Ronaldo for that game. And I was sitting in another part, just basically observing him. And I was looking at his scanning throughout this game. And I saw that there was a regularity with how he did it that I was just so struck by. It was like what's that tool? It's called a metronome, I think, that gives, you know, this rhythmical sound. So his scanning was like a metronome. You know, it was very regular. Scan, 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 with the same type of interval between. And I was mesmerized by that and tried to figure out why is it so regular. And then I suddenly saw the pattern, and that was that every time a teammate of his played the ball, so passed the ball to someone else, at that particular moment, Ronaldo would scan. Then another teammate would get the ball. And when the other teammate got the ball, you saw that Ronaldo's eyes were then now locked on the ball. He looked at the ball. Then the pass was being played again, and Ronaldo would scan. So every time the same. A pass was played, he would scan. A pass was played, he would scan, and so forth. And in between, he would look at the ball. And that makes sense. Because, I mean, the principle of scanning is that, again, it's a vehicle for your eyes. And you want to make sure that your eyes, at any point in time, are locked on the most important information to perceive at that point in time. That's the principle. It makes sense that you want your eyes to take in the most important information. And the timing of this in soccer is such that every time the ball is being touched, something new can happen with the ball. It can change direction. It can change pace. And that's the moment you actually want to look at the ball. But between those touches, and this is easier in soccer than in hockey, I'm aware of that. Between touches in hockey and between passes, when the ball is basically going from A to B, you know that it's going to go to B. And you don't have to visually track the ball from A to B to see that. So that's a moment in time, maybe half a second or so, where you can look away from the ball. So the principle of timing also is then related to frequency, because you're going to get it wrong if all you do is scan with a super high frequency with no reference to timing, because it's all about when do you look at what information, and that's the kind of the secret to frequency and timing.
So, is there anything beyond that that you're tracking that goes underneath just the frequency of scanning? Obviously, timing, I think, is probably the most next important thing to think about. I've tested it out with my own adult league old man playing, and I've seen it on some players. I know I've written on it, the Hockey IQ newsletter, but there's probably a little bit more that goes into this. I'm, for hockey's sake, looking at it as like body orientation. What kind of routes do we skate? I'm curious from your vantage point and research, what else are you looking into within scanning?
Well, we're looking into a lot, so it's but I'm like I say, body orientation is something we also have measured, and we find some cool results on that. We've looked at that both with midfielders, and to see whether they receive the ball with an orientation in the direction of play or in the direction away from where they want to play, where you would want to have players in the direction of play. We looked at it with central defenders, defending against crosses, where one would argue that a beneficial body orientation is to have your back towards your own goal, so that you have basically the whole field of vision is where the other players are. But what a lot of players are drawn to is the ball, so that they're, which is, scanning is really a function of, or the interesting part about scanning is a function of that most players naturally are ball watchers, and it's not necessarily so beneficial to watch the ball or the puck all the time. So central defenders and body orientation is definitely also a thing, and we find correlations there between, so basically when they have a more favorable body orientation, where there are more teammates and opponents in vision, they perform better defensively, and also we find that the higher level players, they do that more than the lower level players. Now, beyond that, probably have, I'd say, 10 to 12 different behavioral characteristics that to some extent can be measured, related to scanning. Now, these are not characteristics that, all coaches and players should be walking around thinking about, because this is very detailed. For example, we look at scan excursion, which is the angle with which you scan, because you can scan very, subtly, just like mini looks to the left or right, or you can move your whole body before you go back to the ball again. So a higher excursion would mean that you have a higher angle with how you turn, basically. We sometimes look at scans and say something about when they are conducted with reference to the situation that you're in. A very simple measure is what we call critical scan, where critical scan is the last scan you do right before you get the ball, which one would argue is the most important scan, because that gives you the most updated view of the display around you. Now, what's interesting, of course, is with some players, where, or let me rephrase, a lot of players don't do these critical scans when the ball is on its way to them, because then they have enough to read the path of the ball, to see how they're going to receive the ball, and so forth. And then you have some players who are just insane, even when the ball is on its way to them. The most extreme player I've seen in soccer is the old great Zinedine Zidane, who used to have two or three, or sometimes even four scans after the pass has been hit to him and until he got the ball. And what you get then is essentially a player that, at least it seems that way, that he has full control over the closest opponent. When he gets the ball, he knows everything there is to know about that opponent. He knows, the foot he's standing on, he knows the direction he's going, he knows his center of gravity, what weight he has, where he's looking, all that details. And this also can be reflected in what I hear sometimes when I talk to to players who play against some of these players. I heard from someone who had played against Zidane, and I heard exactly the same thing being said about someone who played against Robert Lewandowski, the current Barcelona forward. What these defenders said about the experience of playing against these players was as follows. It's so weird to play against him because he looks at me all the time. So you get almost paranoid because these players are looking at you all the time. And that's the feeling that they had afterwards.
That's actually really funny. Like feeling paranoia, like you're the one who's, like as a defender, you almost feel like you're in charge. Like this is my area, this is my territory. You're coming into my home, my dojo. And then it's like the flip is almost, or the script's almost flipped here where you're kind of not the man in charge because they're just watching you and looking to find the weakness in you. That's really funny.
And then to build on that, right? Then scanning is more than a information gathering tool. It's also something you use to impact the opponent because it signals something, like you say, and you can almost talk about a signal of dominance or carving out territory that has an effect on the other player, which takes it to a whole new level.
I'll let you dive into that psychology. That's beyond me for today. That's definitely your expertise. But I'd love to get into, you've done this research. It's fantastic. You have this great information. How has it been and what has been effective in getting this information effectively into the community? Because I would bet that you would have thought like, oh, as soon as I make these breakthroughs, everyone's going to want to adopt it. And I'm assuming it probably didn't just happen overnight and maybe it's taken a little bit longer than you expected. So I'm just curious of how that's been.
Yeah, definitely not overnight. I'll try to make the long story short. The beginning of that was a disaster for me. I did my master's on this. I did my PhD on this. And just like you say, I felt like, you know, I have something here that really is important. It's something everyone should know about. Now, to be fair, the data that I had back then was not that good. I definitely could have done much more out of those early studies than what I did. But the first meeting that I had with the coaching community in soccer here in Norway was painful and traumatic, to use mild words. I did my best over an hour to persuade some pretty high profile coaches back then. I was young, also I was in the beginning of my 20s. I did my best to tell them that this is the future, you should be looking into this, and I was torpedoed. I had no chance. They were basically telling me that this is not relevant. This is why I really didn't listening to this. This is not good. We don't have to scan. And this was back in the day when Norwegian soccer were doing quite well on the international scene. We don't need to scan to know where opponents are and where the teammates are that we're going to play to are. We know that from the way we play. We have a playing style that dictates that. And everyone were listening and nodding to those words. So that's how it started. And then I understood a few things. One is that I need better data. I need to have more convincing numbers to back this up with. And I needed to have better examples. So when I came back to that community and many others years after, I had both. And most important, and this is like to you and hockey, I think having really good examples is the key to have, you know, some of the best players, to have videos, close-up videos showing that this is an exemplary use of this skill, this vehicle. This is how it brings the benefit. And it's hard to argue against when a Sidney Crosby, for example, is doing this in a specific way, then you don't need a researcher to tell you something. You see it and you almost feel it. And if you have data in addition that shows that when we look at many situations, not just like this one example, but we have more weight to this, that you that when you do this, typically what happens is this, then you can have that conversation on a whole new level, which doesn't mean, again, that, you know, this is always right or scanning is always good. There's so many nuances here and it's so complex, but this is enough, I think, to at least give this a seat at the table, something that we should be discussing when we're discussing skill development and coaching and performance overall.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's super important for coaches and developers to get on board with it, because I use the SADE. That's my preferred, SADE. Search for information, analyze said information, decide on it, actually execute it. You know, it's a 4-step process, and how fast can we do it? And getting the understanding, like, okay, the search for information is extremely important. It's not just about like systems. Everyone does this. Like, it's such a chaotic game. And I love soccer and hockey together. I think soccer is just like a slower played out hockey game. The patterns and how they kind of function are relatively similar. But hockey is just so dang fast. It makes a lot of sense. Like, I've noticed just with high school hockey here in Ohio, like, you can tell what other sports players come from, and soccer players seem to have good ideas and vision and IQ when it comes to the game. And I'm guessing it's the pattern recognition is very similar compared to other sports that get played. So I'm curious, from your seat right now, I know you're just dabbling into hockey. Are there any kind of differences you're seeing between the two, or areas that you're saying maybe we should hold the brakes a little bit and slow down before we go directly from what we found in soccer and apply it to hockey?
Yeah, no, definitely breaks. and in the sense that, well, first of all, like you say, there are similarities. So it's to some extent, the 360 degree game. It's very dynamic. It's complex. There's so many things happening around you. So there are, I find that soccer and hockey are maybe the two most similar sports. Well, hockey is this, let's call it the big American sport that's most similar to soccer, more than such as basketball or American football or baseball, for sure. So there's something about hockey that I find very fascinating in that sense. With that said, obviously a much smaller area that you play on, much quicker. The puck handling, the sliding, not the kicking, the way that the puck is moved with the stick, all these things make it different. Plus that in hockey, it seems to me that you're spending a bigger portion of the time on the ice than in soccer, with what we speak about, your front is towards the area that you need to pick up. You don't have that many situations where you have a lot of important information to pick up behind your back. And that's an important distinction. In the beginning, when I did these studies in soccer, I only focused on those situations where players had information behind their back. And the way I looked at that was that I only looked at situations where you got the ball from a player who was positioned closer to your own goal than you. Now, that could be something to do in hockey as well, because those contextual differences, they will play a role. Now, I don't know exactly what role they play. I don't exactly know how this will be played out in hockey. I think that scanning plays a role. I think that this also is a measure for some of these things in hockey. But I also think, or I'm pretty convinced, that you need to differentiate different types of situations and have a little bit more of a controlled premise for when you measure this and how you measure this to tease out what could be similar effects. And that's why we're going to take some time and try to get that right.
Love that. Something that you and I connected on was just a goal recently that Erling Haaland scored, where he was scanning and taking in information, but he also was taking in information via using his arms and hands. to actually feel the pressure. I think it was Crystal Palace last year was a goal that was similar, where he threw his hands out and then he did it again this year. That's something that I picked up on, and I think that caught your attention. I'm curious I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, no, it's because we talk about scanning, we talk about visual perception, but perception is multimodal, right? It's you're picking up information in different ways. So vision is probably the most important sense, if you want. You probably hear something. You'll hear someone approaching from the back. You'll hear voices signaling to you that someone is coming or there's an opening and so forth. Sometimes I think that you can sense, maybe even via smell. That sounds weird, I know, but it's I feel like there's something that you can probably not verbally report on, but you can kind of feel that someone is there, and it could be a shock wave through the air or smell, something like that. And then there's what you talk about, which is the basically the physical touch. And I really liked that example that you put out with Haaland on that, where he clearly was feeling with his hands behind his back whether someone was there, and then his hands came across the defender, and then you know where he is. So the whole point is that you pick up information in different ways, and the best players they're able to make this into a coherent, meaningful view of their reality that they then use to base their actions upon. And Haaland is a wonderful case to watch in that way.
I love how you pulled out, like, you can almost sense the environment. Like, I don't know, like, you just have the I call it the hair on the back of your neck sticks up a little bit. You're like, am I alone right now? Is like someone in the same room? And then like you turn around and you're like, oh yeah, that totally is there. I don't know what that is at all, but I definitely I feel like I'm a little more hypersensitive than most people to that. Like, I can kind of feel where people are even though I'm not looking at them. So that's curious. I didn't even think about that, but I'm gonna start paying attention to. I'm gonna mess around with my high school team this year on that. That's gonna be a fun one. But yeah, because there's so many ways that we take in information, and it's all important. And information, you go to, what is it in school? I think it's information is power. I've seen that so many times on the walls of any academic institution I've ever been at, and it truly is super powerful. But
yeah, and let me just build on that. I'm sorry, but. So for me, with respect to those things, is that everything is information. So when you pick up something, like you talk about the hairs in your neck, it's so to me, given what I do and what I've done, it's always about information. You are picking up something. We don't know exactly what you picked up or how you picked it up, but there's information that somehow got it across to you. It's not like a mystical, completely impossible to explain kind of process. You picked up something, and then you use that information. And I like to think of this as soccer, as hockey. It's really a game about information. It's about picking up information, and it's about signaling or sending information, and sometimes hiding or deceiving with information. And that's just a new way to think about the game, I think, for most people. But that makes sense on a lot of levels, and I think it could possibly enrich how we play these games.
That's fantastic. Game of information. Sometimes we need to hide that. Sometimes we need to give it away. That is a great way to say that. The last piece I want to talk on here is just effective coaching. Okay, it's great to know all of this. And this will kind of probably come back to how you helped spread this information, but just from a point of helping players and helping coaches be better coaches, even, like, what is effective coaching? How do you go about it? Because knowing information, as we said, is great, but we actually need to be able to apply this effectively.
Yeah, no, that's a big, big topic, of course. I think for everyone, it starts with what we're doing now, just addressing this, talking about it, getting more information around it, more insights around it, learning from each other, different sports, different types of experiences, but putting the focus on this game of information and how to pick up information and how to use it, which is not necessarily intuitive. It is something that you probably need to get extra information about. And then from there, we can take it real specific. In my sport, I like to think about how to train this as effectively as possible, as not only having to do with coming up with the most optimal, sophisticated, great exercises there is, but more how can we do this relatively simple? And the simplest way you can be better at this is to make sure that you don't do the wrong thing too much. And by that, I mean, when we speak about scanning now, we speak about it, or I like to think about it as a habit, something that is, again, a vehicle, a behavior that you do to get information in. And to build good habits is important, but it's equally important to prevent bad habits from growing and doing what they want, basically. And in my sport, the most common exercise we have that players will do, well, sometimes when coaches tell them to do it, but if they don't tell them to do it, they will just do it anyway. And that is two and two players on one ball, where they pass the ball back and forth. So passing, receiving, passing, receiving, passing, receiving. Now, what players do in that exercise, always, even at the highest level, is that they basically receive the ball while they're looking at the ball. So you get the ball from your teammate, you look at the ball from the moment it leaves the foot until it gets to me, and then you hit it back, and the same is repeated, sometimes hundreds of times each day. Now, when you do that exercise, looking at the ball while receiving the ball, you're doing exactly the opposite to what we spoke about earlier, which is have a little bit of a shoulder check or a scan before you receive the ball. So essentially what that exercise is doing is that it's building a bad habit. It's helping you to get worse as at something, which is scanning. And it doesn't matter then how much you train perfectly each day, if you have 200 repetitions the same day, with building a habit that you don't want to have. So I would look for alternatives to things like that. I would look at what we're doing in, because tradition dictates us to do it. I would look at and explore other ways to do it. I would explore ways to become more independent of the ball, in your case, the puck. Because if you can do simple little things there, you can start to build habits that will make it better and easier for you when you're out there on the field, which is just one really simple and almost silly example, but an example also of how this is kind of permeating everything that we do on the field or on the ice.
Love that. Comes through everything that we do. That's all I had on my list that I wanted to make sure we talked about. Is there anything that you think we should bring up or talk about or tease out? Otherwise, I'll let you wrap up here. And where can we find you everywhere?
Yeah, no, I mean, once I get started on this, I can continue quite a bit. But
All
I
right, we'll
mean,
have you back on.
yes, no, please, that would be cool. Have me back on when we've done a little bit on hockey. So in a year or two, I'm sure we know much more about this. And in the meantime, people feel free to look me up on Twitter, on LinkedIn. I regularly put out things about this, and I think some of it will have relevance to hockey as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Guy, for the conversation. This was fantastic.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your beauts here next week for a brand new episode.